The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Catherine Shaw, and before we hear the show, we just wanted to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For more information on building your own beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. Now on with the show.
Hello, Daily's here. It's Wednesday, 30th of March, and joining me today, Benjamin Lee. Hey, boo-boo, what's going on today, you-wise?
What a reference that not a lot of people will get.
Well, this is a reference to James Corden's Carpool Karaoke, where him and J-Lo had a little singing session, and he got J-Lo to text Leonardo DiCaprio saying, what was exactly the text?
I want to cut loose tonight. What shall I do?
And Leo's reply was...
Something like, how you doing... What do you mean, boo-boo, club-wise? Or...
Classic, Leo. Yeah, what club-wise. A guy. To the news, where Vaxxed, the highly controversial documentary that promotes debunked theories about the link between MMR vaccinations and autism, has been given a distribution deal 3 days after Robert De Niro pulled it from the Tribeca Film Festival. The doctor at the centre of the doc, Andrew Wakefield, has been called a discredited and dangerous anti-vaccination quack, while many have said the film's inclusion in the Tribeca lineup has threatened the festival's credibility. Ben, is that true? Does one wonky film threaten the credibility of a whole festival?
I think that's a bit extreme, to be honest. I mean, firstly, Tribeca doesn't have
much credibility
anyway. It's not one of the leading film festivals, but even still, I think it's one film. I'm pleased they've taken it off the schedule. I think it is a dangerous film. I mean, last week there was a report that said that, because in 2000, I think measles had been completely eliminated in the US because of the vaccinations, and because of this anti-vax movement, pushed by people like Jenny McCarthy and Jim Carrey, who I would not trust for medical advice, it's now a problem again in the US. It's been spreading, and the only reason is because people aren't getting their kids vaccinated. So I think there's a stat here that there were 970 measles cases, I think, in the past 15 years or the past few years, the past 15 years. And I think more than half of them were, you know, because they weren't vaccinated, even though vaccination was eligible. So to have a documentary that's pushing this agenda, even though there's no medical support for it, by someone who was banned from practicing medicine in the UK, I think it is a dangerous film. So they're right to have taken it off.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between a lack of information and incorrect information that's potentially damaging. I mean, that's something that can trouble the documentary field in general, right? Like, the ethics of documentary filmmaking is often a bit wobbly, and you're not entirely sure where the truth lies. Is there an argument to say that there should be some sort of governing body that checks the factual accuracy of documentary before it's allowed to get to this stage, or is that too extreme?
I think if it has real-world implications, then sure, because this is a film which is trying to get parents to not vaccinate their children, which will lead to problems. So I think in this instance, it should be. I mean, if you're writing an article, then it would need to go through fact-checkers, and it would need to be, you know, if paper was going to run with it, they would be liable legally, you'd think, for any implications. So, yeah, I think there should be. I mean, it's difficult because it's become a movement almost like it's some sort of anti-climate change sort of. It's been linked to some bizarre conspiracy, with the, I think the distributor Cinema Libre is saying that, you know, they're sort of bravely showing this film despite the cover-up that's happening, but I don't know where they're basing any of this on. This whole thing is based on nothing, so it's a conspiracy that isn't a conspiracy.
Are you implying then that it's a slightly cynical move by the distributor, and that the furore that this film has kicked up at Tribeca, and because there's a significant audience who care about this issue so passionately, even if they're technically wrong, the distributor's seen an angle there they can make some money out of this?
Yeah, because when you look at the other films released by this distributor, there's nothing of note, nothing you'd have heard of, but they will get people to go and see this because there is an anti-vax movement. I actually dated someone who was once anti-vax, and it was terrifying to try and talk to him in a rational way about his beliefs, but people do believe it, you know, but he didn't believe in parking tickets either, so.
What?
He honestly didn't believe in them. He had this whole theory about why he shouldn't pay them, and why it was a conspiracy to get money from people.
I thought you meant he didn't believe in the physical thing of a parking ticket. They exist. Yeah. I've seen them. I've had one. Well, onto a film that is screening in New York, barely. It's Get a Job. Roger Dodger, director Dylan Kidd's comedy, stars Miles Teller, Anna Kendrick, and Bryan Cranston. But it was made in 2012 and has been languishing in limbo ever since. Can it really be that bad? I spoke to our New York critic Jordan Hoffman to find out. Jordan, Get a Job was made in 2012, and it's only just come out in New York, so you're one of the few people who've seen it in the theatre, now on video on demand. What happened to it for 4 years?
Well, not 100% due to its quality. As with many things, it was just a corporate boondoggle. What happened was, it was another company that made it. which happened to be CBS Films. CBS Films got bought, and it just kind of got stuck in limbo for a while. Contractually, it had to play 6 days in a theater, so it is showing. Technically, right now, if I wanted to jump on the subway, I could still go see it for a few more days in one screen at the AMC 25, which is the biggest multiplex in Manhattan, right near Times Square. But it is on VOD. The movie itself is not terrible, but it's certainly not good. But it is interesting because of this shelf thing. Now, I want to of it laying on the shelf. Now, what's interesting, and I want to run this by you here, is it kind of represents a bit of a science fiction enterprise. It's almost like one of those episodes of Star Trek or something, or Doctor Who, where you can look into a parallel universe, right? Because the movie was shot in 2012, and it was with two unknowns at the time, Anna Kendrick and Miles Teller. And had this movie come out on schedule, it would have been in release prior to Pitch Perfect, which made Anna Kendrick a star, and rightfully so, and Whiplash, which made Miles Teller the quasi-star that he is now, or at least the known quantity that he is now. And if this movie had come out, how would it have altered their perception among, you know, those that are cognizant of up rising stars is the question. Because I do think that it would have deadened the impact of their current work, because they kind of came out of nowhere, these two great stars. And if you'd seen them, be like, oh, no, those are those two guys that were in that not that good Get a Job movie. So sort of a look behind the curtain, if you will, at an alternate universe of our current entertainment landscape.
Well, the flip side of that, ironically, is we're talking about this film because of the cast, right? So as well as Kendrick and as well as Teller, you've got Alison Brie in there, Bryan Cranston. And the reason I know about this film is that Marc Maron has been banging on about it, as is his way, forever on his podcast, because he's got a small role in it as well. I mean, the kind of received wisdom about this film is that look at that cast, isn't it amazing? But then I'd also argue that a lot of these people have been in some terrible movies as well.
Right. Marc Maron is in like 2.5 scenes. He's good. He plays the owner of a sleazy motel, and he hires all right, well, the basic premise is what's his name? Teller is just out of college and he can't find work. He's a millennial schmuck like the rest of us, and he can't find work, and he's wants to be a video artist. And there's sort of an interesting art reflecting life thing in there. But one of the jobs he gets is at a motel, and Maron is the owner, and he rents it out to a pimp played by Jay Farrow, who's kind of funny because he comes on almost like a blaxploitation superfly pimp with like a, you know, necklace and this sort of ridiculous affectation in his voice. And then when he lets his guard down, he speaks like a regular person. So that's kind of funny. Also, John Cho is in it. Jorge Garcia is in it. Ravi Patel has a quick moment, and he gets vomited on in one scene.
Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Yeah, and that was a flash, because you haven't seen that guy in a while. Mm. And I realized it really hammered it home with this. He was funny as McLovin, but he needs to find another line of work. And I believe he has. I haven't seen him in a while. He's a nice kid, I'm sure, but acting is not his thing. Marsha Gay Harden, Brandon T. Jackson from the Percy, wasn't he in Percy Jackson?
Percy Jackson, Lightning Thief, yeah.
Yeah.
It's about the millennials, right? So it's about young people searching for jobs. Does it say anything serious? It's directed by Dylan Kidd, who did Roger Dodger way back in the day. And that film had something to say, I think, about maleness and how we tend to view the male psyche. Is this saying anything real, or is it simply a dumb yucks comedy that it's going to pass us by?
No, it's saying nothing real. It's he didn't write the script, which is funny, because I was alluded to this a moment ago. The main character is he's selling out. What he does is he winds up making corporate videos for a corporate recruiting firm, like a resume. He does video resumes. Ironically enough, he has to help his father, who's also out of work. Father played by Bryan Cranston. And it's all about, he wants to be an artist, but instead he's taking the hack job. Dylan Kidd came on the scene in 2002 with a pretty good movie, made a follow-up called P.S. with Laura Linney and Topher Grace. That was good. And then it's kind of disappeared. And this movie he did not write. It's by two writers. I looked them up. They have no other credits. And the producers are big shot producers from the 90s by the name of Stacey Scher and Michael Schamberg. And they produced a laundry list of great movies, movies like Pulp Fiction, movies like Aaron Brockovich, movies like other big titles that I can't recall right now. But this is sort of their, I guess they've spun off and have a smaller company. They decided to produce this little film. And yes, it wants to be about millennials in the workforce in our current era or era 2012, but it's mostly just sitcom set pieces. There's a scene where Miles Teller has to pass a drug test and he winds up urinating all over himself and like wacky music plays as pee is zooming everywhere. there's another sequence where Bryan Cranston has to try to talk to the boss, not the boss, the head of HR. He knows that he's good for the job, but he can't get the meeting because he's too old or because of just life sucks. So he winds up devising this sort of scheme to block out the guards in the building. It's kind of like an American football sequence. It's in slow motion and Miles Teller's blocking this guy and Christopher Mintz-Plasse is cool. Blocking that guy, and it's sitcom stupidity, and it's just not that hot, but it's not the world's worst movie. I mean, it's not like it didn't sit on the shelf because it's awful. It's not a one star, it's a two star, but it sat on the shelf because of the corporate juggling. But the only reason to watch it really is because all of these stars have since gone on to do such great things, and it's cool to look at them a little bit younger. You know, it's cool to look at, I might have mentioned Alison Brie and her performance in this. It's fun to watch her a little younger and Miles Teller before he was known, and Anna Kendrick as well. So, yeah.
And you can check out the curiosity that is Get a Job at that one theatre that's a subway ride away from Jordan and VOD. Jordan, thanks so much for talking to us, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
It's my pleasure to be here.
That's it for today. Join us again tomorrow when the film world will have played ball and given us something actual to talk about. In the meantime, you can check our latest droning on theguardian.com/film. Follow us on Twitter, feed us on Facebook, subscribe to the dailies on iTunes. Your wisdom today comes from Jessica Chastain, whose interview with Porter magazine ran with an extraordinary picture of her feeding a Joey a bottle of milk for some reason. She says, when you have both genders represented, then you have a healthier point of view. You don't feel a hierarchy. You don't have anyone feeling that they're being left out or bullied or humiliated. I'm calling bullshit. Bye.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. Whether the story behind your passion is out of the ordinary or simply out of this world, you should tell it in an unforgettable way. Squarespace helps you do just that, with the only websites designed to showcase what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.